You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today. It is Thursday, September 14th, 2017. Thanks for joining me this morning for an in-depth look at tomorrow's headlines, or an analysis, in-depth analysis, more precisely, of what we're seeing taking place today. Some of the things I'm going to be talking about this hour include the continuing assault on President Donald Trump and the deep state, and also asking the question, is he acquiescing to the shadow government deep state tactics or objectives as we see him seemingly make some concessions? What's going on here? And who are the people behind what's going on? Now, I'm in flyover country. As I said, on my way to Branson, Missouri. I'll be there later today. But currently, I'm in flyover country right now. And I want to thank those who have allowed me to use their studio for this broadcast. Who shall go unnamed? But having said that, a number of things that I want to get into. The first and foremost, I want to know how many of you remember the name Richard Higgins. Richard Higgins. No? Sure you do. Richard Higgins was a top official of the National Security Council. He was fired back in July after the publication of a memo that was written back in, it was written back in May, in which he argued that President Trump has been under sustained attack from subversive forces, both within and outside the government, who are deploying Maoist tactics to defeat President Trump's nationalist agenda. Who fired him? H.R. McMaster. This is an ongoing war within the Trump White House, as we have seen departures. Steve Bannon, we've seen Sebastian Gorka, many mainstays of the candidate Trump, his agenda, his policy, being tossed out of the insider's circle by globalists. You know, if it walks like a globalist, talks and quacks like a globalist, it's a globalist. And of course, we're seeing the globalist agenda, at least in my view, being really pushed within the Trump White House. Now, much has happened over the past 24 hours with respect to Donald Trump and his meetings and with members of the Democratic Party on the other side of the aisle. And we're seeing a lot of things take place that cause many of us to question, what are his motives? What's the objective here? What's the outcome here? What's the planned outcome? Let's take a bigger look, a look at the bigger picture on this, and go back to what Richard Higgins warned about back in May. You know, Richard Higgins wrote a memo, and it was not widely disseminated, and it was really, really snuffed out even after it was published in its entirety. But the background, the theme of the memo is this. He stated that the administration of Donald Trump is suffering under withering information campaigns designed, number one, to undermine, then delegitimize, and ultimately remove the president. Haven't I been saying that as well? It's if you can't defeat him, then you discredit him. And if you can't discredit effectively or quickly enough, you co-opt him. And if that person can't be co-opted, the only other possibility or tactic is removal. And I think we're seeing that stage right now. Or are we seeing part of the co-opting phase as we watch Donald Trump meeting with Pelosi and Schumer and others? Is this the attempt at the co-opt? This agenda is moving fast. This three-pronged or four-pronged approach, defeat, well, that didn't happen. Discredit, It's continuing, the assault, of course. Co-opting, we're watching that take place right now. And if that doesn't happen, at least to the satisfaction of the globalists, then what? Removal. What if removal is not successful? Am I talking just political removal? Not necessarily. I'm talking about any, by any way necessary or any means necessary, of course. And that should, that should concern many of us. But Richard Higgins warned about this and was summarily dismissed by H.R. McMaster, the consummate globalist, by the way, that has made his way inside the White House. And I really want everyone to understand how critical, how perilous we are this time in which we live, how perilous this is, what we're seeing really take place. This is absolutely, it's an exciting time to be alive, but it's also very perilous, because if the shadow government wins, if they prevail, we will be relegated to a communist hell in America. And I see, that taking place now in various other areas. One area, including healthcare. But let me reference, get back to the Richard Higgins memo. And I would urge everyone to find a copy. In fact, I'll put a copy, or I'll put a link to a copy in the description here, hopefully. And if not, just search the complete Richard Higgins memo. But Richard Higgins argued that this, what we're seeing today, is not politics as usual, but rather political warfare at an unprecedented level that is openly engaged in the direct targeting of a seated president through manipulation of the news cycle. Let's come to a full stop right there. This is why the existence of Fox News in general, but in particular of Sean Hannity, of Tucker Carlson, of the right of center conservative stalwarts, is so critical to all of us. We need to understand why it is so critical. This is why I have been banging this drum. This is why Peter Barry-Chowka is such a critically important asset to the Hagman Report, to this radio broadcast, to our website, because he understands what's at stake. And he understands, as I do, and I'm sure everyone does, or at least should, that the media is the tool that's delivering that sets the narrative or the meme within the news cycle. And you take 100% control over the media, of course, you've got, your job is pretty much done for you if you are a globalist. Now, a recent poll came out again noting that 91% of the media coverage on President Donald Trump, 91% was negative. Remember before I cited a poll that ran from January through April of this year, and it was broken down from 93% in NBC, and it was NBC and MSNBC, of course, at the top, and then, of course, Fox News at 52% at the bottom in terms of negative coverage of Donald Trump. Well, so what does that mean? And I've said this before, you remove that 52%, or you increase that 52% up to 75 or higher percent, of course, that's going to change the entire dynamic of the media. Right now, we're the only alternative to that, the conservative element of the media, the corporate media, is the new media, the honest media, the alternative media, and of course, we are under sustained attack as well. But understand the complexities, please, of what we're seeing and the importance of what we're seeing. So again, Richard Higgins warned President Trump that this is not politics as usual, but political warfare at a level never seen before, or at least not in modern times, and it's openly engaged in the direct targeting of the seated president through manipulation of the news cycle. It must be recognized on its own terms, so that immediate action can be taken. Because at its core, These campaigns run on multiple lines of effort. They serve as nonviolent lines of effort of a much wider movement and execute political warfare agendas that reflect the intended cultural Marxist outcomes. This is the outcome desired, the Maoist communist outcome. This communist utopia that every conservative, true conservative, is warning about. The campaigns operate through narratives. Understand that. That's how these campaigns operate, through narratives, or some call them memes. And who carries those narratives? It's the media. And now I'm talking not just the corporate mass media, but all media. Because the communists, the hard left, the progressives, the Obamas, the Pelosis, they are aligned, and it's important to understand, with Muslim organizations at various levels. At the local level, for example, Antifa, they've been working with the Muslim Brotherhood, doing business as MSA and CARE, Muslim Student Association and CARE. At the national level, the ACLU and Black Lives Matter, working with CARE and MPAC. And international levels, for example, the OIC, working with the UN. Recognition must be given to the fact that they seamlessly interoperate at the narrative level as well. And this is where the press, the media, comes in. Trump, Donald Trump as the candidate. In candidate Trump, the opposition saw a threat to the, quote, politically correct, end quote, enforcement narratives they meticulously laid in over the past, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years. Now, in President Trump, they see a latent threat to continue that effort to ruinous effect. And their retaliatory response reflects this fear. That's so important to understand. President Donald Trump as a candidate. Think about this. The opposition, the cultural Marxists, the Maoists, the people like Obama, Pelosi, Schumer, they saw a threat to the politically correct enforcement narratives. And they worked hard over the last, and think about this, over the last few decades, they worked hard at establishing these narratives. Now, in President Donald J. Trump, they see this latent threat to continue that effort. So they have to respond in kind and forcefully. Now, responding to the relentless personal assaults on his character, recall back in October 2016, President, or then candidate Donald Trump, identified the players and the strategy flat out. He said that the establishment and their media enablers will control over this nation through means that are very well known. Anyone who challenges their control is deemed a sexist, a racist, a xenophobe, and morally deformed. And how correct he is, and he was then and is now. You know, we have been culturally conditioned over the last several decades. Over the last two decades, especially, we have been culturally conditioned to limit responses to such attacks. Think about how we've been muzzled and how we've been forced to acquiesce to accusations of xenophobia or bigotry or being a sexist or misogynist or a racist. Culturally conditioned to limit responses to such attacks, as yet another round in the ongoing drone from diversity and multicultural malcontents, these broadsides are discounted to our peril, I might add. As political correctness run amok, it's not just that. See, political correctness is a weapon against reason and critical thinking. This is a very, very effective weapon. This weapon functions as the enforcement mechanism of diversity narratives that seek to implement cultural Marxism. It seeks to implement cultural Marxism, that communist utopia I've been talking about. Now, as a candidate, President Trump, his campaign rhetoric, shall we say, not only cut through that cultural or that Marxist narrative, he did so in ways that were viscerally comprehensible, viscerally, I can't say it any better than that, viscerally comprehensible to a voting bloc that then made candidate Trump the president, making that bloc, that voting bloc, self-aware in the process, by the way. And where I am in flyover country, that's evident with the anger, the seething anger, the brewing anger at these cultural Marxists, at the Hillary Clintons. Yes, she might have a book signing in New York or Los Angeles or San Francisco, but I don't think in the open plains of Indiana or Illinois or Kansas, she's going to have that same kind of response. Now, that's just my opining here. Recognizing in the candidate, Donald Trump, and we have to, in my view anyway, we always have to compare, at least keep in mind, the platform upon which candidate Donald Trump ran and had the promises he made, the border wall. As Michael Savage says, borders, language, culture, that's what it all comes down to in American exceptionalism and nationalism. No one should apologize for nationalism tendencies, in my view. No one should apologize for American exceptionalism. Those that do, of course, are the political hacks and pundits and operatives that want to see this communist agenda implemented in full force and right away. And notice that strategy of defeat, discredit, co-opt, and if that doesn't work, remove. Notice how this is accelerating now. I remind people again that the departure of Sebastian Gorka, the departure of Steve Bannon, the people who reflected the principles of the voting bloc that put Donald Trump in office then have been pushed out. Why? H.R. McMaster for one, Kelly for another. These are consummate globalists inside the Trump administration. And I think we have to recognize the candidate Donald Trump compared to the president Donald Trump and understand, of course, the limitations by the office, limitations that are necessary, I would say, being a president as opposed to a candidate. Unfortunately, he can't. We must follow the Constitution. But notice the roadblocks as well that are being thrown up against President Trump's agenda. And we're not talking the roadblocks just merely from the Pelosi's and the Schumer's and the progressive left or the communist left. No. We're talking about roadblocks from the establishment Republicans, the do-nothing Congress, the gridlocked Congress, the intentionally gridlocked Congress. Perhaps they, I would suggest perhaps they are our most dangerous enemies, because Pelosi, you know who she is. You know what she stands for. You know what banner she carries. An enemy that's easily identifiable is less formidable, I argue, than one that is operating within the shadows. And I refer back to the quote from 40 BC, Cicero's quote about the enemies within. But the opposition to President Donald Trump manifests itself, as I'm saying right now, through political warfare memes that are centered on cultural Marxist narratives. Yet, this does not mean that opposition is limited to Marxist as conventionally understood. having become the dominant cultural meme, some benefit from it while others are captured by it, including deep state actors, the globalists, the bankers, the Islamists, and establishment Republicans. Through the campaign, we can all remember that candidate Donald Trump tapped into a very deep vein of concern among many people inside this country that our nation is at risk and is slipping away. Globalists and Muslims, they recognize that for their visions to succeed, America, both as an idea, ideal, and as a nation and political entity, must be destroyed. Atomization of society must also occur at the individual level, with attacks directed against all levels of group and personal identity. And this is why we see the sexism and racism and xenophobia memes. And this was well prepared for us by his predecessors over the last few decades. We saw how it really was accelerated under Obama. We saw how this was slyly implemented with the Clintons back in the 90s. And not letting the right off the hook, not letting the so-called conservatives off the hook, we saw the acquiescence of the Bush dynasty, whether it's George H.W. or George W. Whether it was unwitting and naivete that played a role, or whether it was deliberate, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, we have what we have. And as America is, without any argument whatsoever, a Judeo-Christian culture, any forced inclusion of this of postmodern notions of tolerance. Now, Richard Higgins says that that's designed to induce this nihilistic contradictions that reduce all thought, all faith, all loyalties to nothing. Think about that. Group rights based on sex or ethnicity are a direct assault on the very idea of individual human rights and natural law around which the Constitution was framed. This is an assault against society. This is an assault against you and I, just as much as it is a direct attack on President Donald Trump. It's even more an attack on us, you and I, as Christian conservatives and as a nation. And if you identify with being a citizen, and that's all, even if you identify as apolitical, you still have to stand for something. And you are still in the crosshairs, regardless of your intended or unintended apathy. You know, transgender, for example, transgender acceptance memes, they attack at the most basic level by denying a person the right to declare the biological fact of one's sex. Think about that. Think about how everything is changing. You could not have this conversation back in the days of Father Knows Best, back in the 1950s. Richard Higgins addresses that this way. He writes that when a population has a 2 plus 2 equals 5 mentality imposed upon it, there are many that benefit. That actually, when he wrote that, I actually had to stop and consider that. Who benefits by this 2 plus 2 equals 5 mentality? Well, the mainstream media, for one, he writes. The principal mechanism for implementing narratives is the mainstream media. They benefit by that. Who else benefits? Academia. Academia has served as a principal counterstate node for some time. They remain a key conduit for creating future adherence to cultural Marxist narratives and their derivative worldview. So they benefit. Of course, what he calls the deep state, what I call the shadow government, of which the deep state is a part. The deep state benefits. The successful outcome of cultural Marxism is a bureaucratic state beholden to no one. Certainly not us, certainly not the American people. And with no rule of law considerations outside of those that advance deep state power, the deep state truly becomes God bestriding the earth. This, according again to the Higgins memo, Richard Higgins, written back earlier in 2017 and published, I guess it was last month or July perhaps, but you're getting the idea now. And of course, the globalists and corporate bankers, by exploiting populations, the exploitation of populations unfettered by national protections and notions of personal morality and piety, global corporatists and bankers, they win. And obviously, citing again the Higgins memo, he cites the winners being the Democratic leadership. Well, I call this the communist element. Of course they win. The Democratic leadership, as Richard Higgins writes, has been a counter-state enabler that executes, sustains, and protects cultural Marxist programs of action and facilitates the relentless expansion of the deep state. That's their intention. You know, for everyone engaged in this effort, especially those from within the shadow government or deep state, or the Obama holdovers, the permanent government apparatus, as it might be, you've got to look at the legality of this, the Title 18 concerns. When I say Title 18 concerns, this applies to, for example, as we have seen, with James Comey and the testimony before Congress, whether it be from Comey or from Lynch or from whoever it might be, and even going back to Lois Lerner, but all of these government operatives, we're seeing this clear title, these clear Title 18 concerns, yet these people have gone so far unpunished. It's absolutely incredible to see, incredible to witness. You know, it was August 18th of this year when nationally syndicated radio host Rush Limbaugh sounded the warning that America, that we are on the verge of a civil war. America is under attack from within. Our culture, our history, our founding are under the most direct assault I have seen in my life. That's what he said on his radio show on August 18th, Friday. 2017. And he added, and I'm sure it's the same with you. We haven't seen anything like this. You might even get away with saying that we are on the cusp of a second civil war. Now, for him to admit that less than a month ago, I think was a seminal moment in history. Some of you, he said, might say that we're already into it, that it's already started. However you characterize it, though, we are under attack from within, and it's being bought and paid for by people from outside America in addition to inside, of course. I've been saying this, and he said that I'm thinking of people like George Soros and any other number of international financiers whose objective it is to take the United States out and down as a superpower, to literally erase the United States as a power or super powerful nation. A civil war waged by the left is already upon us, and the acts of domestic terrorism in acts and words. Now, watch this week. In fact, later today, watch what happens at Berkeley. Watch what happens with the Ben Shapiro appearance. Is that still going to take place? And if so, what's going to be the response by Antifa, but by the protesters there? And even more importantly, what's going to be the response by the police and by the members of academia? We have seen what Antifa is, and I've explained this to you, their call for violence against Donald Trump supporters. We have seen, of course, and I've explained this, if you look at the 1932 flag of the Communist Party of Germany's paramilitary ring, for example, and you look at the logo of Antifa, they're almost identical. You remember I have talked about the website of Antifa, Antifa-related website. It's going down. They're calling for violence against all supporters of President Trump and capitalists, you and I. Now, I've archived all of this, and of course, there's been a level of infiltration by people, operational assets within the Hagmann Report that we are going to be reporting to you with the people involved. And for operational security, it's got to be timed properly. And I do suspect that after today, should today's events take place at Berkeley, I think that either most likely next week, you're going to hear the names of the principals that are behind this street-level thuggery, this street-level fight. You know, this is more than Twitter tweets, whatever they are. It was back August 14th, 2017. Nicole Fuller had tweeted the following: rape and kill all white people. SCPDHQ at Justin Myers confirms cop investigating racist graffiti in Huntington Station. Now, it's not clear to me whether this Nicole Fuller is authoring or is behind this or not, but merely reporting on it. I suspect that she was reporting on it, the graffiti sign in Huntington Station, New York, that called for the rape and killing of all white people. It's graffiti on a wall, for example. But many tweets, many social networking messages are actually saying this very thing, that they're pushing this street level violent narrative, this terrorism. The website, It's Going Down, Vice Magazine, they're promoting this street-level violence. And we need to understand that the threat is real, and the threat against our nation is real, as real as it is to you and I. You know, stepping back a little bit, looking at this from a bigger level or higher level, a bigger picture, we live in a time where loyalty to ideology, especially the ideology of cultural Marxism, has superseded, is above loyalty to our country, to our nation. And you've got to think about the implications of that. This is in its entirety, this is the final last gasp, or I shouldn't say final, but because of the ascendancy of Donald Trump to the presidency of the United States, because of the defeat of Clinton, because of the agenda that that candidate Donald Trump had spoken about, and President Trump is attempting to instill in politics, at least for the most part, the blowback, the response by the progressive, the cultural Marxist is much greater than anyone, I believe, anticipated. This is why we have Barack Hussein Obama and Valerie Jarrett in their skiff and their 8,200 square foot command center on Embassy Row, not going away. And you watch as Obama and Jarrett, and Jarrett, of course, being Obama's brain, much like Nussbaum was Hillary Clinton's brain, at least that was argued. You watch how they will come out of the shadows and direct the narrative, just like Richard Higgins had warned in the memo that McMaster had snuffed along with Higgins in the Trump administration. And we've seen that, just as Richard Higgins warned, as I started out this broadcast, just as he warned, you're going to see this all-out assault by the communist left against the Donald Trump presidency, most assuredly against the American people. And we saw that with the departure of Steve Bannon and Sebastian Gorka. We're seeing that with the assault on Sean Hannity. And it's just, it's interesting to me. Let me speak on that for a moment. It's interesting to me that Sean Hannity is up there, as far as I'm concerned, one of the only conservatives, true conservatives in the mainstream media that is actually attempting to get the word out via the Fox News platform. And I think that that's why he is such a target and is being targeted, even by members of these, even by so-called conservatives or self-proclaimed conservatives, which just blows my mind. They are attempting, some self-proclaimed conservatives who are so sanctimonious, in other words, so full of themselves. I'm not going to use big words. They're just full of themselves. For example, an irrelevant, lawyer from Michigan who runs a blog and comments on movies, making some, in my view anyway, some just spurious allegations of misconduct against Sean Hannity. For what? And his efforts as well, through charities and specific charities. For what? Thinking, of course. Well, I'm going to stop there. You get the idea. The assaults out there are just ridiculous. But the thinking is what's important here. In my view anyway, what is critically important to understand is the logic or their logic behind these attacks. And this includes the attacks against the entirety of the honest media as well, the alternative media. We are under sustained attack. Jack Posobiec was on the Hagmann Report not too long ago explaining this very issue, that he's under attack. And the attacks, despite Donald Trump being in office, the attacks continue. Why? How is that even possible? And I often hear, and especially in flyover country, you hear questions like, for example, why hasn't the Department of Justice under Donald Trump pushed for prosecution of Comey, for example, Loretta Lynch, the tarmac meeting? Why haven't they done any meaningful investigations? The anger is seething in America, and especially, and do not, folks, underestimate the anger, the sentiment of the people who really matter and who really make this country what it is. And that's the people inside the center of America. It's not the yuppies. I guess that's an old word that dates me. It's not the young crowd in Los Angeles or New York City who believe in their perverted, convoluted minds that they are much smarter than you and I, that they've got some intellectual step up, leg up on us, that they're enlightened by embracing such things as transgenderism and homosexuality, that they've got this that they are mentally superior to the average American. Because, see, we don't understand. Oh, we understand fully. And they are underestimating. Believe me, they are underestimating the resolve and perhaps the upcoming response of those people I just mentioned, of you and I, the people in flyover country. What we are seeing take place, as I have said many times on this platform and on the Hagmann Report, and on other shows, we have seen or we are witnessing a cold civil war within this country being brought about by the collectivists, but by the people who embrace this multiculturalism, by the communist, really they're just plain outright communists. They're cultural Marxists, whatever you want to call them, but they have had decades to infiltrate our government, and they're still there. Many of them are still there. Now McMaster is there as well. What about McMaster? Can you trust McMaster? The consummate globalist, H.R. McMaster, advising Donald Trump. McMaster is nothing more than a globalist. And we have to be wary of that. Look, think about this. There was an article in Pundit City written by Linda Goudsmit. And the title of the article was, this is from some time ago, I believe. I don't have the date. But Linda wrote that President Donald Trump, the title, walks like a globalist, talks like a globalist, thinks like a globalist, McMaster is a globalist. And she wrote this, that President Donald Trump campaigned on an American First commitment. He promised to protect American sovereignty and reject Obama's leftist internationalism, collectivism, and globalism. Yet, globalist swamp creature John McCain recommended H.R. McMaster to be head of the National Security Council. Why? Because McMaster is a globalist who continues to support things like the Iran deal. Who does that benefit? Really, the globalist and Iran, of course. Note that the NSC, by the way, is charged with advising President Donald Trump or the president on national security issues and foreign policy. The International Institute for Strategic Studies, the acronym of which is IISS, IISS, where McMaster served for 11 years. Now this, right up to the time he became the head of the National Security Council President Donald Trump, he served there for 11 years from 2006 to 2017. It is a strategic network that advances globalism. And it's philosophically opposed to the American patriotism and America First commitments of President Trump. So how is it possible that McMaster was brought into this inner circle? Now, Linda Goudsmit had done a great job in outlining McMaster, his role, for example, in helping Barack Obama impose the worst deal for America of all times. That, of course, you're talking about the Iran deal. You know, McMaster, when you look at him and you go through his history, understand that he was a consulting senior fellow of the globalist think tank advising American politicians toward globalism during both terms of Obama. A think tank financed by multinational corporations seeking to sell their products to Iran. The International Institute for Strategic Studies. Again, a British think tank. Isn't it interesting how we're seeing things come from Britain and Europe? This Eurocentric mentality. That, of course, an aside. But it was founded back in 1958 with a focus on nuclear deterrence and arms control. Now, they expanded their presence and worldwide influence. They've got offices in D.C. and Singapore and Bahrain, and they advertise themselves. In fact, on their website, if you look at their website, and I've gone through their website because I want to get an idea of who McMaster is and what his influence is and how deeply he's entrenched here. You can't separate IISS from McMaster. So you look at the website of IISS, they say that their experts deliver impartial, rigorous analysis. They are drawn, their experts are drawn from all over the world and include established world-class strategists as well as the brightest young analysts. Now, the Institute's corporate advisory arm offers strategic advice and political risk analysis to commercial and government clients. Yeah. Okay. Their current stated mission is to promote global peace and security and maintain civilized international relations. Notice that phrase, global peace and security. This is the background of H.R. McMaster. Now, all of this sounds wonderful. Oh, let's all sing kumbaya. But the fact is, there's a serious credibility problem, as pointed out by Linda Goudsmit. That's a very serious credibility problem. IISS is, a globalist think tank. How can you take global? I mean, it's globalist. It's a globalist think tank. That's their problem. They claim to be nonpartisan and independent of government and other bodies, but look at where they get their money from. Who funds them? And if you want to know about an organization, look at their funders. Their primary funding sources, in this case, the Royal Family of Bahrain. How about George Soros' Open Society Foundation? Man, is there anything that guy does not fund that's left of center? The Carnegie Corporation funds this think tank. Multinational globalist corporations that require U.S. clearance and licenses to sell American products to foreign governments. Now, specifically, of specific interest, are donors and companies involved in aeronautics, for example, Airbus, BAE Systems, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon. Globalism is only nonpartisan and independent to a globalist. Never forget that. Being partisan or biased at this moment in history is not a matter of being a Democrat or Republican. It is a matter of being a globalist or being an advocate of national sovereignty. End of story. This, what we're watching, is not about Democrats or Republicans. You are either, at least in the practical sense, you are either a globalist or you are an advocate of national sovereignty. Let me break it down one step further. You're either for good or you're for evil. It's just that simple. It is the difference, for example, between Obama's internationalism and President Donald Trump, his America's first patriotism. You know, we, the Americans of the United, the citizens of the United States, Americans, we had a choice, and we made that choice in 2016. We had a choice whether to pledge allegiance to the United States or to cast our allegiance to the collective, to the world. We chose America. Now we're fighting, even today, we are fighting to keep that choice. As Linda writes in her article, globalism walks like tyranny. Globalism talks like tyranny. Globalism is tyranny. Globalism is a clear and present danger to American democracy and American sovereignty. And I know some people are going to say, oh, America is not a democracy. I understand. It's a constitutional republic, representative republic, but you get the idea. H.R. McMaster, just to go back to her article, H.R. McMaster walks like a globalist, talks like a globalist, and thinks like a globalist. Therefore, he is one. And if you look at his role in, for example, the unmasking schemes, how McMaster defended Susan Rice, how McMaster blocked Ayn Hirsi Ali from speaking to the National Security Council on matters of Islamism. Now, Ms. Ali, as many people know, has far more authority on the subject of Islam and the existential dangers of Sharia law than the globalist think tank that McMaster has grown from. And during the campaign, notice that President Donald Trump is very clear in identifying Islamic terrorism as a threat to America. Now, but however, today we're seeing McMaster embracing, holding on to Obama's censorship policy, not allowing, disallowing the words Islamic terrorism to be joined together. You know, if Mick, and I'm going to go back to what Linda Gottsmith wrote here. If McMaster were simply a consultant offered an opposing perspective, it might be beneficial. But this guy is a decision maker advancing Obama's globalism instead of President Donald Trump's America's first patriotism. You know, globalism is opposed to any nation's sovereignty because ultimately it sees the world as one. Hence the phrase one world order. Subjective reality, it romanticizes globalism. In, as we've seen in the lyrics of John Lennon's Imagine, we've all heard that, right? Objective reality recognizes globalism as the new world order, the despotic binary socio-political structure of masters and slaves. And the end game of globalism is one world government that divides the world into a very few number of people who are the rulers, the ruling elite, against the enslaved population who serve them. Look at the recent meetings on climate change. Look at the hypocrisy there. The hypocrisy would be laughable if it wasn't so dangerous. There is an article right now in the, I think it's a Daily Mail. Yeah, a Daily Mail. The hand-in-hand charity, raising money, of course, for hurricane victims. What's it called? The hand-in-hand hurricane. It was a fundraiser. That started with a lecture about global warming. Then celebrities with multiple homes and multiple cars and private jets, you know, just like you and I, right, started soliciting much-needed money. There was a whole bunch of A-list celebrities who turned out for this hand-in-hand, a benefit for Hurricane Harvey relief, this telethon. Now, the Daily Mail reported just how much carbon dioxide they burned through globetrotting. Justin Bieber is thought to have traveled at least 136,000 miles in planes since September of last year. Carbon emissions. These people are the ones that are telling you and I, we've got to tone it down. George Clooney, Justin Bieber, Beyonce, Cher, Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, these are the elite. You know, it's okay for me, but not for you. And it's again, it would be laughable if it wasn't so serious. But this is all part of the globalist mentality, as an example. And headlining on Drudge today, of course, I do want to get to this as well, is the issue of his meeting that he had with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And again, what's the, you know, why? What's the influence there? Well, I think I answered that for you. I think that the inside that circle, of course, is H.R. McMaster, is the globalist mindset, whether or not he's being strong-armed into it. Now, some will come and say, well, look, Donald Trump is the master deal-maker, and the reason behind this meeting is he can sit one-on-one and make deals. It's the art of the deal in practicality. But is it really? And I'm gonna tell you something, all right? We elected Donald Trump to represent our ideology. And he will be called out at every turn where that ideology is not consistent with what his candidacy represented, which is why I went back to the Higgins memo and the importance of understanding what is taking place, the fight that is taking place inside the White House, inside the circles of government inside D.C., and the effect it is having on Americans in flyover country. And the war that's being waged right now, it's a cold war between, as I see it, as I'm sitting in this studio right now, as I see it right now, among the people in flight, or the ideology of the people and the mindset and the sentiments of people that live and work in what I call flyover country, or what is known as flyover country, as opposed to those who deem themselves, again, morally and intellectually superior to us. I got news for them. They're going to be hurting pups should this ever turn into a hot civil war. They don't have any idea what they face. They may believe they're morally and especially intellectually superior and enlightened, but they haven't a clue of the can of whoop ass that they're going to be opening. That's as blunt as I can be. So in the final minutes of this broadcast, I just want to say I have provided, in my view anyway, a good macro-level look at the ideology behind the globalist agenda, the ideology that was contained and is contained in the Higgins memo, which I believe is so important and is so critical for people to understand, and who at the end, of course, you can hear that. Let me just turn that off. Don't you just hate that? First of all, live radio, isn't it great? Don't you just hate that when websites have the automatic media that play? I really dislike that. But the macro level, of course, the ideology behind the globalists and the fight, the players in the fight, the media, the memes, why it's so important, of course, and then the infiltration that we have. We see it in practicality with H.R. McMaster. And now what are we looking at here very shortly or later today? Berkeley and the violence promised by Antifa at Berkeley. We all have all of this together. We have to understand that all of these are working, these different facets are working together. And again, this is a very dangerous time that we're seeing. Antifa is promising violence, and they intend to deliver. But again, I don't believe they have any clue of who they're facing and what they're biting off. Antifa activists in the shadow of upcoming talks, especially at Berkeley, they're increasingly mobilized in the wake of course, President Donald Trump's election. They're very unapologetic about what they describe as the necessary use of violence to combat authoritarianism. Can you believe these words, for example? They're the ones that are pushing that. But the anarchists are out there, and we have to keep our eyes on that. We have to keep our eyes on what's happening at the larger level, at the White House level. And I think some people are starting to realize, of course, that there's some really, not so good stuff happening within the Donald Trump circle as he is forced to sit down with and to perhaps even make some compromises because of the establishment Republicans. But I would like to end this broadcast the way I started, just to understand that the administration of Donald Trump is suffering under this withering information, numerous information campaigns designed to undermine, delegitimize, and ultimately remove him as the president of the United States. That's the end game objective. And of course, we, the conservatives, well, all Americans, are in the crosshairs of this agenda. And the players, of course, as I stated, the players include the media, the mainstream media, the corporate media, academia, and of course, everything that's under the umbrella of the shadow government, including the deep state, the global corporatists and bankers and the democratic leadership, otherwise known as the communists in this country. These are the people who are fighting us and fighting our attempt to keep America as a constitutional republic with morals, with Judeo-Christian values. This is the battlefield. This is the war that's being waged. And at issue is the continuing survival of our country. Will our country survive? I believe we will. But we need to wake up, band together, fight, unite. Folks, it's been a pleasure talking with you this morning. Next broadcast will be from a studio in Branson. That'll be tomorrow. Later on, 7 to 10 p.m., catch the Hagman Report. And of course, 2 to 3 Eastern Time, John and Joe's program. God bless.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report.
Tune in to the Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.